You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday the 14th of September 2022 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, today I want to talk about a new Hollywood movie that claims to be a true story. It's about a black kingdom in Africa that had a female army. And this female army was supposedly very fierce. And according to the movie, their enemies were the white people. And this contradicts with what actually happened. The movie is called The Woman King. It's a 2022 American historical epic film about the Agogi, the all-female warrior unit who protected the West African kingdom of Dahomey during the 17th to the 19th centuries. Set in the 1820s, the film stars Viola Davis as a general who trains the next generation of warriors to fight their enemies. It is directed by Gina Prince-Bythewood and written by Dana Stevens, based on a story she wrote with Maria Bello. So how can it be a historical epic if it is based on a story that she wrote? The film also stars Tuzo Mibidu, Lashana Lynch, Sheila Atim, and John Boyega. Set in the West African kingdom of Dahomey during the 1820s, The Woman King follows the all-female group of warriors, the Agogi, who protect the kingdom. The group's general, Naniska, trains a new generation of warriors to fight against an enemy who wants to destroy their way of life. Very interesting. The only people that wanted to destroy their way of life was to destroy slavery at that time. The British Empire ended up making slavery illegal and they put a stop to it. And slavery is what this entire kingdom was based upon. It's also known as the Kingdom of Benin. And of course, the movie seeks to make the white people out to be evil, trying to capture the Africans as slaves. And the truth of the matter is that this was black Africans capturing and trading in other black Africans in quite hideous ways. And I think I've heard of the Dahomey before. I've done some narrations talking about white explorers going into Africa. And one of the places that they described and the human sacrifice that they described when they got there was Dahomey. Now, we will have a look at what Wikipedia has to say about this place. But first off, we'll just have a look at an essay that was written about it, The Slave Trade, Depopulation and Human Sacrifice in Benin History. And this is the same place that this movie has been made about, which glorifies the Dahomey people. And this is what essay says. Crucifixions, human sacrifices and every horror the eye could get accustomed to. To a large extent. But the smells no white man's internal economy could stand. Blood was everywhere, smeared over bronzes, ivory, and even the walls. Such was the description of Benin City rendered by R. H. Bacon, commander of the British Punitive Expedition, in 1897. And of course, the Punitive Expedition was to stop slavery. That was what was punitive about it. They had gone there to prevent them from continuing to traffic in slaves. This account, together with Captain Alan Boyce Reagan's, left no doubt but that Benin City was truly no more than a collection of half-ruined mud houses, not better than the huts in an ordinary native village. Many historians have accepted these first-hand observations as conclusive evidence that Benin had indeed undergone a gradual moral and cultural degeneration since the end of the 17th century. The first explicit report of this alleged decline in the Benin Empire was that of David van Nyendel, who observed that the houses of Benin City stand like poor man's corn, widely distant from each other, and that the city itself was desolate and depopulated due to civil war. Nyendel's report of depopulation, combined with Olfert Dapper's earlier account of large-scale human sacrifices, has been correlated to the expanding European slave trade with West Africa in most historical analyses of Benin's decline. So the city made its money from slavery, and once slavery was outlawed, the city fell apart. They didn't really have anything else that they could do. They tried to sell palm oil, which they will try to say was the black African's idea, but of course it wasn't. That was white people's idea. It was colonialism that put a stop to slavery. And of course, this movie pretends that colonialism is the enemy of the Africans. And of course, the Africans did see it that way because they wanted to continue selling slaves. So let's have a look at what Wikipedia has to say about Dahomey. For much of the 18th and 19th centuries, the Kingdom of Dahomey was a key regional state, eventually ending tributary status to the Oyo Empire. And I think in the movie they might make out the Oyo Empire to be enemies as well, but they were tributaries to the Oyo. European visitors extensively documented the kingdom, and it became one of the most familiar African nations to Europeans. So we have lots of eyewitness accounts of what went on there. The Kingdom of Dahomey was an important regional power that had an organized domestic economy built on conquest and slave labor. And that was the economy of Africa for thousands of years. It was built entirely upon slave labor. That was their main trading commodity, was other black Africans. And that was just the way that it was. And black Africans took to slavery very well. When the white people went to America, they tried to use the Red Indians, captured Red Indians as slaves, and they were no good. And whenever white people have tried to use white people as slaves, they were no good. But all the reports of the time say that black Africans did take to slavery very well. And what I mean by that is they very quickly forgot their history, their culture, that they got on and did the work, and they were happy to be fed and clothed and housed and all the rest of it. And when you look at the reports of slavery at the time of slavery in the Americas, you can see that there was almost a familial bond between the master and the slave. And the American slave owners wanted to Christianize the black slaves, and they took the instructions in the Bible to be the way that slaves should be treated, which was very, very different to the way that the African chiefs treated them. As we will see here, the African chiefs gave them up in human sacrifice, and the Arab slave traders castrated the males. White people's treatment of black slaves was probably the most mildest treatment in all of history of slaves. So the economy here, it says, of Dahomey was built upon conquest and slave labor. Significant international trade and diplomatic relations with Europeans, and of course that trade was in slaves. A centralized administration, taxation systems, and an organized military. And of course, what the military was used for is going on raids, raiding native villages and capturing weaker tribes and enslaving them. And if you went and spoke to the weaker tribes about this, they would say that that's what they wanted to do to a tribe that was weaker than them. It was just the way that Africa was run. Notable in the kingdom were significant artworks, an all-female military unit called the Dahomey Amazons by European observers, and the elaborate religious practices of Vodun, which we had referred to earlier about the crucifixions and the human sacrifices. The growth of Dahomey coincided with the growth of the Atlantic slave trade. So it was only because of this slave trade that grew that this state was able to become a centralized administrative state. And once the slave trade was outlawed, then it went back to the condition that I was referring to earlier, with the villages looking no different to any of the other native villages in Africa. It became known to Europeans as a major supplier of slaves, As a highly militaristic kingdom constantly organised for warfare, it captured children, women and men during wars and raids against neighbouring societies and sold them into the Atlantic slave trade in exchange for European goods such as rifles, gunpowder, fabrics, cowrie shells, tobacco pipes and alcohol. So this is the reason why we had an Atlantic slave trade. It is because black Africans wanted these products and they didn't have anything else that they could exchange for these products apart from ivory. It wasn't that white people went into Africa hunting down black men, women and children and kidnapping them. It was these black African chiefs from places such as Dahomey that did this. And the reason why they did it is simply because they didn't have anything else that they could exchange for the goods. I mean, what were the white people supposed to do? Just hand over the rifles and the tobacco, the pipes and alcohol for free? I mean, they had to get something in exchange for them. And they paid a lot of goods for these slaves, and the slaves were purchased for a lot of money in America. And if you're going to purchase, if we say they're like machinery, because they were able to do what we have industrial machinery doing now on farms, if you're going to pay a lot of money for machinery, you're going to make sure that that machinery is well maintained, aren't you? You're not going to mistreat it because it represents a significant investment. Whereas what the black African chiefs did with the slaves is they sacrificed them. If they weren't actually sold to the white Europeans, then they were sacrificed. Remaining captives became slaves in Dahomey, where they worked on royal plantations and were routinely mass executed in large-scale human sacrifices during the festival celebrations known as the annual customs of Dahomey. Now, what do you think those black slaves would have preferred? Do you think they would have preferred to stay in Africa and be sacrificed alive in a black magic ritual? Or do you think they would have preferred to take the chance of going to another country where they would have been well looked after by Christian people? I think they would have preferred to go to America and live rather than be tortured to death in a human sacrifice in these annual customs. The annual customs of Dahomey involved significant collection and distribution of gifts and tribute, religious vodun ceremonies, military parades, and discussions by dignitaries about the future for the kingdom. I mean, it's quite horrendous, this, isn't it? You've got a human sacrifice going on, and then you've got the people doing the human sacrifice and giving out gifts to the people in the village. It clearly got no concern whatsoever for these other tribes folks around them that they have kidnapped. Let's have a closer look at the annual customs. Since Dahomey was a significant military power involved in the slave trade, slaves and human sacrifice became crucial aspects of the ceremony. Captives from war and criminals were killed for the deceased kings of Dahomey. So this was a separate thing, and this was ancestor worship. During the ceremony, around 500 prisoners would be sacrificed. As many as 4,000 were reported killed in one of these ceremonies in 1727. And of course, they say prisoners here, but they were basically slaves. That's what would happen to the slaves. And in other parts of Africa, if you were a slave and you were owned by one of these black chiefs, African chiefs, and when these chiefs died, they were all ritually slaughtered along with the person that had died. So they died at the same time. Most of the victims were sacrificed through decapitation, a tradition widely used by Dahomeyan kings, and the literal translation for the Fon name, that's the name of the tribe, the Fon name for the ceremony is Zwatanu, yearly head business. So it was all about decapitating these heads. And then, of course, what would they use the heads for? They would decorate the chief's house in these heads. I can recall reading about this in one of those reports about how the chief's head was, the chief's house was literally covered in loads and loads of heads and rotting flesh and skulls, and that was the slaves that they had done that to. I mean, there are reports of some of these villages in Africa just looking like charnel houses. The European observers just said it was like going to a butcher's. Absolutely horrific. What they would do. In later years, this ceremony also included the spilling of human blood from the sacrificed. So they would literally slice them up and drain the blood out of them and throw the blood around. I mean, absolutely barbaric and demonic what was going on here. So again, I ask, what was better for these slaves, to have that done to them or to go to America and pick fruit on a farm? Related with this, there was also a significant military parade in the ceremonies that further displayed the military might of the kingdom of Dahomey. And of course, if they were doing this trade with the white Europeans, then they would have been trading slaves for weapons. So they would have had this this military might that these other villages didn't have, and that probably would have helped them with their enslaving of these other peoples. And I guess you could say, well, maybe the Europeans should have said, well, we're not going to sell you guns. We'll sell you tobacco. We'll sell you silk, but we're not going to sell you these advanced weapons that, that these other tribes do not have, because that wouldn't be fair. But the problem was, you could say, well, Europeans should have done that. But say the British had said, we're not going to do that. Well, the Portuguese would have sold them the guns. And if the Americans had said, well, we're not going to do that, then again, the Portuguese or the English might have sold them, because we weren't united as a European front. We had various different countries and empires that were competing. You couldn't do something like that, because then the other empire or the other country would take advantage of it, and they would get to buy all the slaves, because they were the ones that were exchanging the weapons for them. Now, in the 1840s, Dahomey began to face decline, and that was with British pressure to abolish the slave trade. So it was the British that put a stop to this. The Africans did not want this to happen. Africa was the last place to actually stop the slave trade. I think in Mauritania, it wasn't even banned until 2005, something like that. And of course, we regularly hear that in Libya, with the collapse of the Gaddafi government, there are slave markets operating in Libya. And a lot of the black Africans that come to Libya, who are trying to get across to Spain, they end up being captured by the Libyan authorities, and then they appear at the slave market. And I think it's a very low price to pay for a slave. I think it's about $200. I mean, the equivalent that you used to pay for a slave back when the slave trade was legal, that these white Americans used to pay, was $10,000 in today's money. So no small amount of money to pay for to pay for a worker on your farm. Well, when the slave trade was abolished and Dahomey started to face this decline again, which I was referring to earlier about how the villages that then looked no different to any of the other ones, this included the British Royal Navy imposing a naval blockade against the kingdom and enforcing anti-slavery patrols near its coast. I mean, the Africans did not want to stop slavery. They literally had to be forced to do this, because it was a thousands of years old tradition that is what they would do. They would go out hunting. They would go out hunting for members of another tribe, and they would capture them. And if they could capture them, then that was it. They were enslaved. And this was just the way that Africa worked. During this time period, Dahomey was also weakened by military defeat from Abeokuta, a Yoruba city-state, which was founded as a safe haven for refugees escaping slave raids from Dahomey. So I wonder who it was that set up this city-state that was a safe haven for people escaping from the slave raids. Well, of course, it was white people. Now, this movie is apparently set in the 1820s, and they're claiming that there are white people that want to change the African way of life. And of course, they're going to portray this African way of life as being absolutely peaceful and idyllic. And the white people are coming there with their colonialism, seeking to oppress the black people. But the truth is, their way of life was slavery. White people wanted to put a stop to slavery. And that was the reason why we had colonialism, was so that we could put a stop to slavery. It was David Livingstone's idea. All you have to do is look up David Livingstone on Wikipedia to see that his idea was to colonize Africa, and that would help to put a stop to slavery. And that was where this idea came in, that they could trade in palm oil. So The movie has completely reversed the truth and yet is claiming to be historically accurate. So I hope people that do have a look at that film, I hope they do actually look up the history of this Dahomey and Benin and find out the truth. Dahomey became an adversary to the British Empire after the abolition of slavery during the 19th century. The British sent diplomatic missions to Dahomey in an effort to convince King Guizot to abolish human sacrifice and slave trading. Guizot did not immediately concede to British demands. However, he attempted to maintain friendly relations with the British by encouraging the growth of a new trade in palm oil instead. So the British wanted them to sell palm oil instead, and that's what he started to do to try to stay on the right side of the British. But what he really wanted to do was continue with his human sacrifice. I wonder if they'll be depicting human sacrifice in this movie. In 1851, the Royal Navy imposed a naval blockade against Dahomey, forcing Guizot to sign a treaty in 1852 that immediately abolished the export of slaves. However, the treaty was immediately broken and slave trading efforts continued in 1857 and 1858. So the reason it continued is because black Africans wanted it to continue. Historian Martin Meredith quotes Guizot as telling the British, this is the king, this is what he said to the British when the British said, "We want you to stop selling other black Africans as slaves." He said, "The slave trade has been the ruling principle of my people. It is the source of their glory and wealth. Their songs celebrate their victories, and the mother lulls the child to sleep with notes of triumph over an enemy reduced to slavery." So from childhood to adulthood, everything was about slavery, and he was speaking the truth here. It was the source of their glory and their wealth, because once the slavery was abolished, the kingdom of Dahomey just fell apart. And of course, they're going to depict this in the movie as once colonialism happened, Dahomey fell apart, and it was this idyllic, peaceful place before the white people went there and tried to take these black Africans as slaves. But the truth is, it was all founded on slavery. And the British wanted to do away with the slavery, and they wanted to do away with the human sacrifice. During a diplomatic mission to Dahomey in 1849, Captain Frederick E. Forbes of the Royal Navy received an enslaved girl from King Guizot as a gift. And what did Captain Forbes do with this slave girl? Did he mistreat her? Did he beat her? Did he human sacrifice her? Did he put her in chains? Did he rape her? Did he do all these awful things that we're told white people did to slaves or black people did to them? No. She would later be named Sarah Forbes Bonetta, and she became a goddaughter to Queen Victoria. So that's the sort of thing that white people were most likely to do with if they were given a black slave girl, an Englishman. If an Englishman was given a black slave girl, then she would become the goddaughter to Queen Victoria. They wouldn't be misused in any way. So let's have a look now at the relations with the United States. The United States officially outlawed participation in the international slave trade with the Act Prohibiting Importation of Slaves, signed by President Thomas Jefferson in 1807. Thus, the United States never established any formal diplomatic relations with the Kingdom of Dahomey. However, the last known slave ship that sailed to the United States secretly and illegally imported a group of 110 slaves from Dahomey, purchased long after the abolition of the slave trade. The story was mentioned in the newspaper The Tarboro Southerner on July 14, 1860. On July 9, 1860, a schooner called Clotilda, captained by William Foster, arrived in the Bay of Mobile, Alabama, carrying the last known shipment of slaves to the U.S. from the Dahomey Kingdom. In 1858, a man known as Timothy Meyer made a wager with acquaintances that despite the law banning the slave trade, he could safely bring a load of slaves from Africa. So we know that years before that, the British were trying to prevent them from doing this. 2 years before that, 1852, they had signed a treaty saying they weren't going to carry on selling slaves. And yet here we are in 1858, this is going on. Describing how he came into possession of the slaves, Captain William Foster wrote in his journal in 1860, "From thence I went to see the King of Dahomey. Having agreeably transacted affairs with the prince, we went to the warehouse where they had in confinement 4,000 captives in a state of nudity, from which they gave me liberty to select 125 as mine, and offering to brand them for me, from which I peremptorily forbid. Commenced taking on cargo of Negroes, successfully securing on board 110. So I read that out to show that it was the African king that wanted to brand these slaves. He wanted to brand them with a hot branding iron. And it was the American captain that said, no, we are not. I do not wish you to do that. And the reason why he was doing that, why he was going there, was just to prove that this African kingdom was still selling slaves. And unfortunately, the British had not put a stop to it yet, although it cost us an absolute fortune. Now, there's a part of the coast around there, around this Dahomey kingdom, that is called the Bight of Benin. And historical associations with the Atlantic slave trade led to this region becoming known as the Slave Coast. As in many other regions across Africa, powerful indigenous kingdoms along the Bight of Benin relied heavily on a long-established slave trade that expanded greatly after the arrival of European powers and became a global trade with the colonization of the Americas. Estimates from the 1640s suggest that Benin took in 1,200 slaves a year. And that's in the 1640s. I mean, by the 1700s, 1800s, that would have been up into the tens of thousands, perhaps hundreds of thousands. Restrictions made it hard for slave volume to grow until new states and different routes began to make an increase in the slave trade possible. The Bight of Benin has a long association with slavery, its shore being known as the Slave Coast. From 1807 onwards, after slave trading was made illegal for Britons, the Royal Navy created the West Africa Squadron in order to suppress and crush the slave trade. White people created a squadron to get rid of it. Black people didn't want to get rid of it. These efforts were magnified after 1833, when slave trading was made illegal throughout the British Empire. These efforts would continue until the 1890s. So for almost a century, Britain was trying to put a stop to the slave trade. And this cost Britain significant sums of money. In fact, we only paid back the amount of money it cost us a couple of years back, the debt that we had from doing this. And it also cost the Royal Navy hundreds, if not thousands, of sailors' lives from tropical diseases. The old Royal Navy rhyme says, "Beware, beware, the Bight of Benin, for few come out, though many go in." So lots of British sailors actually lost their lives trying to prevent the black Africans from selling other Africans as slaves. And yet today, we're made out to be the bad guy, we're made out to be the ones that oppressed the black Africans, and we have movies like this Woman King coming out, which portray the white man as going in there and being responsible for slavery and trying to oppress these black Africans and destroying their idyllic way of life, when in actual fact their way of life was slavery and human sacrifice. And it would still be going on today if British people hadn't laid down their lives and paid a lot of money to put a stop to it. Well, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.